What's the Rolling Around the Barrel Vintage Baseball Podcast? You know us. You know what we do. We talk all kinds of different baseball things. Normally, this is the part where I say we talk to vintage baseball players from coast to coast, border and border. But we're not doing that. We're outside the box tonight, and these tend to be, well, my favorite episodes. I don't know how else to sugarcoat it. I love all the episodes. Don't send me Pony Express letters. But when we can bring you different baseball content, that's really fun and stuff you don't hear all the time. That's when I think we're really doing our best here on the show. The co-host tonight, who's the co-host? You tune in sometimes just to find out who the co-host is. It's Jeffrey Kozlowski.
Crapshoot.
Yes. Captain and pitcher for the Greenfield Village La-di-da's, and a teacher, which is important tonight. Jeff, how you doing?
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. SAT is done. We're finally done with that nonsense. I'm so done with it. And just in time for parent-teacher conferences. So for all my teacher friends out there, we feel you. It's going to be good, but we'll get through it.
Parent-teacher conferences at the end of the school year? Really? That's a thing? I don't remember. It's been so long.
Yeah, we're on trimesters here, so we got our third round, but parents are kind of done, just kind of like the kids are kind of done, but got to do our part. Some parents do want to hear how good their kids are doing.
Jeff, do you judge teachers when you go into your child's parent-teacher conferences?
100%. Absolutely. I put a boatload of work into my job and into my profession, and I see like the difference between the high school teachers that are equally putting in the effort and those that are not and clearly are not. I give all the credit in the world to the elementary school teachers. You have a bottomless amount of energy that I could never possibly do. But yeah, of course I judge. I'm happy to judge.
We are dealing with I'm dealing with my stepdaughter finishing up her senior year here, and she'll be heading off to Grand Valley State University. And she finished in the top 10, Jeff. The top 10. They didn't tell her what number she finished. Good. But it was a top tenner. So we know who finished first and second, obviously. So we're just saying that she finished third because they haven't proven otherwise to us. So third.
Isn't that the beautiful thing about baseball research and research in general is you make a thesis until somebody disproves you or nobody even cares about it. And it's like, yeah, okay, fine. Third.
More of the latter. Correct.
There we go.
So let's bring in our guest. The guest tonight is Allison Levin. She, in her own words, does a lot of kooky research. She is a member of officially right now, she's a member of the St. Louis chapter of SABRE, the Society of American Baseball Research. And she's also a professor at Webster University and so much more. We're going to find everything out about her. Allison, thanks for coming on the show.
No problem. It's fun. I'm excited to do this.
So we'll try not to make this too monotonous for you, but what is, Jeff, how do you want to run these questions? Back and forth? You want to just go back and forth, one for one?
Yeah, we can do that. And, you know, if the mood strikes us, we'll just talk over each other.
Oh, yeah, we do that all the time. But at least the listening audience will know who's making the mistake. I'm not saying it'll be you, Jeff. I'm just saying Jeff's going to pepper you with teaching questions. I have a feeling. My question is, my first question is, for one, it's a two-part question because the first question is very easy. What is the name of the St. Louis chapter of SABRE?
We are the Bob Bragg St. Louis SABRE chapter. And to make a small correction and a small humble brag, I'm actually the president of that chapter.
Okay. Hey!
There's, yes, nothing wrong with humble bragging. So you're the president of the St. Louis chapter, running for vice president. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I'm currently a board member for this for Sabre. I've been a board member for 5 years, and Leslie Heafy, who I adore, has decided to step down from vice president. And I thought, hey, why not? I can do, you know, well, I can never do what Leslie does because Leslie is amazing, but I could do half the job that Leslie does and probably still be sufficient as vice president. So I decided to run this year. And I am lucky enough to be running unopposed. So as long as a few people vote for me and not too many people vote no contest, I will hopefully become vice president of Sabre in August.
I'm going to go ahead and ask you, what does the platform look like when you're running opposed in a Sabre chapter? We don't know what an opposition would look like in this case, but for those who aren't familiar with how Sabre works, is it like running for a political office when you're doing this? Do you have to convince people of where your strengths are and what you're going to do going forward?
Absolutely. We have a voter document that's basically our platform that we fill out. So it's, you know, who we are, what our education is, what our skill set is that we bring to the Sabre board. And then, you know, there's a question that was essentially, why you? Why should you be vice president? And then you get specific questions. I think, you know, for vice president, it had to do with the chapters and the committees, because that's what the vice president is primarily liaisoning with, and that's what they're really in charge of. And then I had like 4 or 5 more questions to answer that dealt with DE&I, that dealt with term limits, that dealt with just everything that Sabre could be facing in the next few years, you know, recruitment, retention. And so you're really selling yourself as to why you're the best person for the job and why the voters should vote for you. And then for the people who are running for the board of directors, they actually had a town hall platform on Zoom where they actually had to sell themselves over Zoom, you know, with all 8 of them on the Zoom call, sort of like you would envision like a CNN town hall. So I didn't have to do that since I don't have an opponent. But if I had an opponent, I would have had to do that as well.
That bell is for you, Jeff, to ask a question. I've got a Jeff bell.
So one of the things I've, you know, in kind of prepping for research, Allison, that Sabre Videos has posted a research panel from 2022. Can you walk us through about some of the conferences you have spoken at, some of the things that you have discussed with different groups and different topics that have grabbed your interest?
Yeah, I've done actually quite a bit. I've presented at just about every Sabre convention since I joined Sabre. So there's a lot that I've done. I started off, the very first presentation I ever gave was actually at a Sabre Analytics conference. And it was about looking at all-star voting and how all-star voting is it predictable or unpredictable based on, you know, statistics, or are the fans really swaying where it's going? I've done a lot of, as I said it before, kooky research. A few years ago, I built a database of everybody's walk-up music for that year, and then sliced it and diced it and played with it to see if I could see any trends of what players were using, what music was the most popular, just, you know, if certain positions use certain music that other positions didn't use. So we just had a lot of fun with that database. I had a really great research assistant that year, and we just were all over Spotify. My Spotify year-end unwrapped was very interesting that year. But we had just a ton of fun with that. I've been on panels for the Women's Baseball Conference talking about how to do research and just how to proceed with research. I've been on panels at the Analytics Conference talking about artificial intelligence and machine learning and how that sort of ties into my work, because right now I'm doing a lot of work looking at Instagram and TikTok. And so those algorithms are based in artificial intelligence and how you can go from, like, for example, last year at the convention, my research was really looking at TikTok and players on TikTok and whether they're recognizable. And one of the things I was talking about is how you go from being a Taylor Swift fan, following the Yankees, asking their players about Taylor Swift, and all of a sudden be on Yankees TikTok in like four easy steps. And that's all the algorithm and how, and our, you know, artificial intelligence reflects that. So I said, I've done just a little bit of everything at this point in my career, I think, when it comes to baseball research.
You brought up all-star voting and the social media and everything. Let me ask you this. Have you done anything showing and the involvement in Major League Baseball players with their social media, as opposed to what kind of affection they're getting in all-star votes?
I have not. That's actually something that is very interesting to me. When I first did my All-Star Game project, all that we really had was Twitter. And so Twitter was included in the All-Star Game voting. My, that project, I included Twitter, but it was sort of how many tweets did they post within the given voting period. How they, because it was when they were still announcing like every 6 weeks where people were in the standing. So they do it differently now. And so I had Twitter in there as a variable. But when it came down to the regression analysis, it became unimportant. But I would love to do something now when we're really talking about like TikTok and Instagram and with the way that they've changed All-Star Game voting. I wonder if there is some correlation between popularity on Instagram and TikTok and that notoriety, or that, not really notoriety, but that ability to be recognized solely from your TikTok, whether that would increase your popularity and the votes that you get. So that's actually something that I thought about doing. I just haven't gotten around to doing it because every year I come up with something crazier and crazier.
What inspires that? Like what I never would have even begun to think about, like TikTok or Instagram or Snapchat or any, you know, the other social media feeds. Where did that, like, what was the genesis of that?
I started my research primarily in Twitter, and Twitter made sense to me. I was on Twitter. It made sense to me to be able to have numbers. It had counts. It was the way I thought about things. And then as Twitter sort of changed their API, it got harder to do research on Twitter, was less interesting on Twitter because the players weren't really tweeting that much. And it was just people talking about the players. I started to become more active on Instagram and realizing that players were posting on Instagram, and whether it's them or their team, they're posting on Instagram. And then, so I started doing a little bit of work on Instagram, and then my students introduced me to TikTok, which was a dangerous, dangerous thing to happen to me. And so then I started realizing that there was even better content on TikTok for baseball and baseball fans, and that you could really make these great connections. And then usually what happens to me is my brain just sort of works in kind of its own weird way. And I'll be sitting there and I'll be watching content and I'll say, huh, I wonder if this is true. And then as soon as I ask that question, it goes in my little file of things that maybe I should research. And then it percolates. And at some point I'll say to one of my friends or something, do you think it's too weird if I look at the wives and girlfriends of baseball players? And they'll be like, what? And they'll be like, yeah, the wives and girlfriends of baseball players on Twitter or on Instagram and TikTok. And they'd be like, no, that sounds cool. And I'm like, wait, I have my next presentation.
So you've come across some things then. So what I'm hearing is you've looked up a lot of content on social media, which means you've come across a couple of things, and here's what I mean. Before social media really got crazy within the last 10 years, my favorite piece of trivia that I knew the answer to was the fact that Michael J. Fox was not the first Marty McFly, that they had hired Eric Stoltz to be Marty McFly, and then he got fired. And then Michael J. Fox came in and did it. Now back when I used to think that is the coolest piece of trivia I knew, nobody knew that. And now a lot of people know that. You've run across some things people don't know. Like you said, you were looking up family members. You think of something and you're like, I wonder about that. What are some examples of some crazy things that you have come across that you did not expect?
That's a hard question. I think right now my brain almost expects everything. The first thing that sort of blew my mind is I was just on my own Instagram, so not trying to do any research, and I happened to follow Vanessa Hudgens, who was in High School Musical, all those things. And all of a sudden I realized that she was dating and is now engaged to a baseball player. He's a minor leaguer for the Pirates. I'm not going to remember his name for you now. It's Cole something. I'm not going to remember his name for you. I'm sorry. But that sort of blew my mind. It was like my two worlds sort of colliding into one. And all of a sudden she was sitting there, you know, at this Pirates game. And I was like, what is she doing at a Pirates game? And then it turns out that she was dating and is now engaged to this. I don't even know if he's playing anymore, but he was a minor league baseball player. So that one blew my mind a little bit. I see everybody
searching. Cole Tucker.
Thank you. I knew that was from about somewhere. I cannot remember his name. So that's always weird. It's always weird to me, just the moms of baseball players, or the wives of baseball players, and how their schedules are, and this is a little creepy to me, honestly, how open they are with their children and their schedules on social media. Like, that's something that I don't think I would want to do. But like, you can follow like Rachel Gomber, Austin Gomber's wife, and she will show their day from like when the kids get up to going to the stadium to going to bed, and like just to show like what her life is like. But you could probably track them down really easily, which I'm surprised more parents of athletes aren't concerned about that. You know, that they're not a little more concerned. You know, like other families, like Bryce Harper's wife is on Instagram, but she really doesn't show those children as much. And it might have the differences between being Bryce Harper and Austin Gomber. But you just see a lot of crazy stuff. You see multi-billionaire wives like selling you jewelry on Instagram. You know, like, why are they doing that? Like, what do they need to do? Like, why does, you know, Freddie Freeman's wife need to be selling me jewelry on Instagram?
Weird stuff. I just found out a couple of weeks ago, because I was looking through your pictures, and you have a picture of you and Brandon Phillips of the Cincinnati Reds. And I just found out who his wife was a couple of weeks ago. She's a WWE wrestler, Jade Cargill. And that blew my mind that's going on. He had a nice career. I believe he's retired. Is that's true, right?
I think he is retired. He falls a little outside my research area right now, but yeah. I just love it when you see these stories where I love it when the wives are doing something besides just, you know, being baseball wives. And I understand like that you can't always do that. But I love when I see things like that, where you see a career like Sarah Waka, Michael Waka's wife, runs this thing called Prom Series, where they bring in, they get other baseball wives to donate clothing and jewelry and makeup and all this stuff for underserved youth in the communities where their teams are located. And they do a back to school event and they do a prom event. And she runs this whole nonprofit. And I'm like, I love seeing that. That's the stuff that really sort of makes me excited about it, is when you see these wives who are doing a lot to give back to their community, not just, you know, going to the stadium every day. And there's actually nothing wrong with going to the stadium every day. I would go to the stadium every day. But I like it when you sort of see these interesting stories that develop of what the wives are doing outside of just being the wife of a baseball player.
I would, so that would probably explain why my friends keep telling me I should, you know, you should check out Justin Verlander's wife. I hear
she's a former model, so
everybody checks out.
Oh, that's why.
because she's Kate Upton.
Allison, I want to bring you back to something that you brought up before, and I think, you know, for a lot of us who do research in the vintage baseball world, because we're trying to look up things about our team and looking up newspaper accounts, newspaper records, and you referenced AI, and that seems like no matter what profession you're in, anybody in upper management is looking at AI, good or bad. How do we use it? How do we embrace it? What does the future hold with regard to research in the AI world?
That's a hard one. I am not a huge fan of AI for research at this point. And I think it's because of how the LLMs work. You just have to, they only know what they've been told. And so they only have the information that's been fed into them. And so they're not always the best. I have been known to use AI to sort of get a jumping off point, a starting point. I think that it can be very helpful to ask, you know, ChatGPT or another AI system, you know, your essential research question and just see what it has to say, because that can give you some ideas of what to write about. I also think if you're really stuck, you know, and you don't know what you want to write about, just asking it a really broad question about vintage baseball or, you know, or about, for me, like, you know, what are the biggest, I think I asked for this project, I asked, you know, who are the most popular wives and girlfriends of baseball players on Instagram? I think I asked that to ChatGPT and it gave me a list of names back. So it gave me a place to start. So I think it can be helpful in that way. I think you have to be very careful because I think it's been known to, and I don't know if they fixed it, but it's been known to sort of make up sources and sort of tell you what it thinks it you want to hear. And so you have to be a little bit careful with that. I think as it evolves and it gets better, I think it'll be a better and better starting place. Like, I know a lot of people say the bad word here. A lot of people start with Wikipedia, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I think AI will eventually replace that as a starting jump off point. Of, you know, just getting a lot of information quickly and that you can then disseminate. You know, we are actually going to tout this too. We're actually the AI machine learning committee of Sabre is actually building an LLM, so a ChatGPT type system for the Sabre website that's going to include a lot of different baseball outside websites as well. So that's the committee's project. So it's hopefully going to be something like when you're talking about baseball, that would be an excellent starting off point because you'd be able to ask it baseball related questions and it would know the answers because that was what it was taught to learn was baseball.
And we are talking with Allison Levin. She is the president of the St. Louis chapter of Sabre. And also, Allison, you are a professor at Webster University. Could you tell everybody what it is that position does with you?
I am a professor of sports communication. So I teach the youngins anything that they want to know about sports and communication. So we train people. We train the future broadcasters, analysts, PR people, marketing people, ticket sales, you name it. If it's in sports and they want to work in it, that's what we're preparing them to do. And so we are, you know, teaching them everything from basic communication classes all the way through, you know, culture, sports culture, women in sports, you know, how to write for sports, how to write for academics, how to communicate things like business and analytics to a novice audience. So just trying to get them prepared for any job that they could possibly want in sports.
What kind of people do you have like that take the class? Is it the baseball people? Is it the analytics people? Is it the numbers people? Like, what's the typical student, if there is a typical student?
We have a lot of athletes. Our program is made up, I'd say, probably 3/4 of our program are athletes. We do have a lot of baseball players. I think that that's just a byproduct of the fact that me and the other person who teaches these classes are both really baseball people. but we get a lot of basketball fans. We get a lot of basketball players. We get a lot of softball, soccer, you name it. We have those players. You know, when I teach my communicating analytics course, we spend about 3/4 of the class on baseball, and then we go through other sports that are working on analytics. So there's something for everyone there, because the reality is these kids who want to cover baseball are probably not going to start out covering baseball. They're probably going to start off covering college, you know, D3 basketball or something, and then have to work their way up. So they need to be able to talk about everything. But we do spend quite a bit of time on baseball because I think it's the most advanced of the analytics that are out there beyond, besides soccer, which we spend a little bit of time on, but I'm not a soccer expert and don't feel that comfortable there. So we spend some time on it, but, you know, soccer and baseball are by far the most advanced when it comes to analytics.
Allison, you were born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri. And you said, except for 4 years in Iowa going to school, that's where you've been. You've been to sporting events all over, I assume, but St. Louis is thought of in the baseball community as the baseball city of America. What is the experience in St. Louis like, and why is it just a little bit different than everywhere else in the country?
St. Louis fans are diehard fans. You don't see in a lot of places in the country, you see fans that go the whole spectrum from, you know, I'm just going with my friends to we're totally diehard. St. Louis, everybody's a baseball fan. Whether they admit it or not, they're a baseball fan. When October rolls around, everybody's got the Cardinal gear. Everybody's got red. Everybody knows when every game's being played. You know, the town just is different. You know, I've been to quite a few opening days, and St. Louis opening day is sort of exemplifies what St. Louis baseball is. It's, you know, they bring out the Clydesdales and everybody's clapping for them. And then they bring out on, you know, convertibles, they bring out every Cardinal National Hall of Famer, every Cardinal Hall of Famer who are still there and able to come. They bring them out and they take them on a circuit around the stadium. And they bring every single player on the roster out on trucks going around the stadium, and they get off and they shake the hands of everybody. And it's just, you know, it's a 45-minute extravaganza, but everybody's on their feet screaming the entire time. And you don't see that in a lot of places. You don't see that sort of enthusiasm where you have, you know, a Hall of Famer or just a Cardinal Hall of Famer who a lot of the people in the stands don't even really know who they are, but yet they're getting a standing ovation because they're a Cardinals player in a red jacket. And that means that they must be somebody, you know. You can bring any Cardinal player. I was at a game this week and they had David Eckstein throwing out the first pitch and he got a full on standing ovation. That's just sort of the Cardinal way. If, you know, when Skip Schumacher and John Jay were in town with the Marlins, you know, they had to stop the game because when they brought out the scorecard, like Skip Schumacher got so loud, they had to like wait for people to calm down. And the first time John Jay went to first base to coach, the same thing happened. And you could see people who aren't Cardinals fans looking around like, what's going on? And you're like, it's because John Jay's at first base. You know, he's the coach. But it's like people don't forget in St. Louis. And that's sort of the mentality of the St. Louis fan is we don't forget. If you play for us, we're going to cheer for you no matter how long you played for us and no matter what happened after you come back, you're probably getting a standing ovation. And if you come back and play for the Cardinals again, you know, if you're a Lance Lynn or you're an Albert Pujols, then the whole town goes absolutely wild.
We mentioned before about walk-up music. We're talking about like how excited people are getting for this. That was always a big conversation for my high school games. So we would always talk about what our walk-up music is or would have been. What is your music? What would it have been?
I hate this question because it's so...
Sorry, I'll take it back. I'll take it back. Then I'm sorry.
Don't ask it, Jen.
I made my intro to sports communications class pick their walk-up music. That's their first project. They had to pick walk-up
That's a great icebreaker.
And then explain why they chose it. And I always have this question and I never quite know the answer because it's always, there's so many things in my head, but I always have said 24 Flavors by Annie DeFranco has always been sort of my go-to answer because it's like on 24 Flavors and a whole lot more. Like, I think that's kind of a fun little thing. But my favorite Cardinal is Lars Nufar, and I don't actually know the full song, but when he went to play in the World Baseball Classic in St. Louis, he sort of got dubbed an international superstar, and he sort of gets referred to now as international superstar Lars Nufar. And he played along with it, and he walks up to, when he walks up to the plate now, you know, it's super short because of the pitch clock. The music just says, superstar. And I'm like, I kind of would like that. I'm like, that kind of works.
Would be a good one.
I can't let you get out of here, Allison, without giving you opportunity to gush about your favorite baseball player, who is Clayton Kershaw of the Los Angeles Dodgers. I'm going to let you go ahead and tell everybody, even though he has a reputation of maybe not dominating in the postseason, that's just what I've heard. Tell us what it's like being in St. Louis and rooting for a Los Angeles Dodger starting pitcher. I'm sure you've been conflicted at many a game.
Yes. I can't even tell you when my Kershaw fandom started. It was sort of like, I always watch, I'm one of these weird people who has two teams, but they're two NL teams, which most people, you know, it's NL and AL. But when I was in college, my best friend was a Dodgers fan. And so I just sort of, it was easy to sort of watch Cardinal games and immediately watch Dodgers games, and it worked. And so over the years with the Dodgers, you know, Clayton Kershaw came up and I'm like, hey, he's pretty good. And then he got better and better, and it became sort of a fascination and a fanaticism for me with Clayton Kershaw. But, you know, I will say I truly believe that the postseason curse stuff is overrated. He's not that bad in the postseason. He's had a couple bad games, but they're the ones that everybody remembers. But in terms of conflicts in the playoffs, I was at the Cardinals game where he gave up like 13 runs in a very short amount of time. And that was the biggest conflict maybe I've had in my Clayton Kershaw St. Louis Cardinals fandom, because I wanted him to have a good game, but I needed the Cardinals to win because Cardinals fan. So I was hoping that he'd just give up like 3 or 4 runs, not like blow up and have to come out of the game in the third inning. So that was the hardest one for me. You know, now I've gotten on a bad track record where whenever the Dodgers come to town, he's never starting. So I haven't seen him actually pitch live in a lot of years. I just ended up off cycle with it, but I'm going to all 4 games in St. Louis this year, and they're in August, and I'm hoping he's back because I have a fear that it might be his last year. And, there are people who have me on, like, you know, like health and safety watch if it is his last year for when he retires. I think I have a whole cohort of students who are going to send me text messages to make sure I'm okay if he retires. And they're trying to strongly encourage me to find a new favorite player just in case I have a meltdown when he announces his retirement. I think I'll be okay, but when it happens, it could be bad.
Well, Allison, thank you so much for joining us on this Rinky Dink Baseball podcast. We really appreciate you, and I'd like to get you out of here on a question about statistics that are very important to me. Right now, the Tigers, the Detroit Tigers, right now are winning 6-0. Earlier today, the Yankees got shut out. Currently, Javier Baez is batting .206, and Aaron Judge is batting .174. That means that Javier Baez is better than Aaron Judge. Yes.
For the safety of my life in this podcast, I'll say sure. I'm sure that's the answer, and everybody will agree with me on that.
It's a statistic that tells the entire story. Jeff, your thoughts?
Yes, batting average is what you always want to go to. Just ignore all those other statistics and just say early season batting average explains it all.
When you find When you find cherry-picked stats. That's right. That's exactly right. That's what you have to do in baseball is you can find the beautiful thing about statistics in baseball is you'll be able to find one that tells the story you wanted to tell. It's just like life. Jeff, any last words for Allison?
I would have a whole slew of questions here, especially, you know, going into things like the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. I'd love to, you know, pick your brain on that or on the Bloomer Girls of the 1880s here. But for us to roll out where if somebody would be interested in learning more about women in baseball, where could they go? What are some resources or potential things that you would recommend to learn more about the fairer sex, as it was so often called, or so often written about there?
I would recommend first starting with Sabre. Sabre has great resources, great articles on women who played baseball and the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. The Women in Baseball Committee has a lot of great resources there. Once you've exhausted all the resources on Sabre, and that will take a long time, you can also look to the IWBC, the International Women's Baseball Center. They've got a lot of great stuff coming up. So I think those are two great places to look, but I would say, and I say this in most cases, if you're looking for anything baseball related, the best place to start is Sabre. A quick search for women in baseball or any player who's played in the, you know, All-American Girls Professional League, books about the All-American Girls Professional League, you're going to find that on Sabre. And that's just, you know, it's a great resource for anything. Best place in my opinion to start if you're doing baseball research.
Sounds like somebody's running for office.
Something somebody would have said before they were running for office.
Allison, thank you so much for joining the show. Please stay on. Don't hang up on us because we'd like to say goodbye to you like gentlemen. For Jeff Kozlowski, I'm the Barrel Roller Matt Bernard, and we want to thank you for listening to the show. Don't forget, you can find all of our episodes on Podbean or pretty much everywhere where you find podcasts, all over the social medias. And we are not on TikTok. I think that would be frightening for people. But thanks for listening to everybody, and we'll be back next week.